that driving. Bill Lane crosses up. Van Vliet, okie doke move, and lays it up for two. Lee with a nifty move there.
He could go all the way, and the freshman takes it to the house with no time on the clock. Are you kidding me? He takes it 60 yards. Welcome to Redbird Nation.
And the shoe. She gives it to Katie Broadway. Broadway taking it herself down the left side. No good. But she's going to get her own rebound. Kicks it out. Kansas Sykes for three. No,
from local high school action to the birds and the pros, with live interviews, reporting, debate, and discussion, WZND's Red Zone brings you all the sports you can handle each week. The Red Zone starts now, only on 103.3 WZND,
the pulse of Redbird Nation.
We may be in normal, but this isn't your normal sports talk show. It's the Red Zone, live from the campus of Illinois State University. Good evening, everyone, and thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday evening. I'm Anthony Ferretti. I'm joined alongside my other two musketeers and co-hosts and producers for this evening, Joey Dwyer and Scott Rosala. And boys, it's been a long winter break, but we're finally back here at ISU, and it's the first Red Zone of the semester.
It is, and it's great to be back, and everybody, welcome. That's Anthony Ferretti, our new, I don't know, kind of just coming on, just, you know, but that's Anthony Ferretti, that's our new sports director, our new host of the show, so he's going to be opening it up every week from now on. It's no more Hector Carrion, Joey.
And that's all right, though, because Hector is on to bigger and better things, and we're still here hoping to keep the Red Zone name positive. And I think you're going to notice a couple changes that we've made to the show over the break, but I think they're all going to be good changes. We're trying to get you, the listeners, involved a little more. So just more fun for us and more fun for you guys, hopefully.
Yeah, and it's been a long winter break. I know, definitely for me. But what did you guys kind of do over your winter breaks? Like, what's been going on with you guys?
I'm not going to lie. I was bored. I had to go all the way back to Iowa, and I'm just sitting there twiddling my thumbs. All my friends are 2.5 hours away or more, yeah. And so I'm just sitting there. It's like me and three buddies. We play street hockey every day because there's just nothing else to do. And so that's how I spent most of my break. But you know what? It's all right. We made it back, and I was so happy. I came back like 4 days early just because I wanted to be back at ISU. I just wanted to be in the environment again, get going. Classes are going well. So I'm just ready. I'm ready to get it going, boys. I'm so excited.
And I am too. I mean, it was a long break. Got to do a lot, actually. I went and saw, does anybody know who Chris D'Elia is?
Oh, he's so funny. Yeah. He's a comedian. He's so funny. Yep. I saw him like last February.
Yeah.
Dude's hilarious.
Well, I saw him, my girlfriend actually brought him up to me, showed me him, and I watched a little bit of his YouTube videos, and, I thought he was pretty funny, and then we went and saw him live, and, I thought he was okay.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't think
just okay, yeah.
I thought that his openers were actually more funny than he
is
was.
Is he first. Still doing the? Is it still like the Follow the Leader tour? Is that what he's doing still?
I believe it is.
Okay, that's the show I saw. I thought it was pretty funny.
Was there a whale segment? Did he talk about a whale?
Oh,
like coming on stage. Do you remember that? Because that was like his best one.
I can't remember. It was a while ago, but I remember it being pretty funny. I saw him in Milwaukee. But no, yeah, that's awesome. That's more fun than I had. I went to a couple Hawks games. That's really the best thing I did.
Have you been to a Hawks game before?
Oh yeah. Oh okay. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, but now the United Center's got that brand new scoreboard that looks
beautiful.
Amazing.
I haven't seen that yet. Is it? I heard it's massive.
I'm going to a game in March for my grandparents' anniversary, so I'm excited to see what the scoreboard looks like because it's huge just from the videos that I've been seeing.
I actually forgot about that.
No, yeah, yeah. I saw them win too. They beat the Wild, so that was a fun night.
You want to know what's funny is every time as a kid I'd go to a Blackhawks game, they played the Minnesota Wild.
Bro,
yeah, I swear I've seen the Wild.
It's either
play.
The Wild or the Jets every yes. time I go. Literally every time I go. And I know they're in the Central, mm-hmm. and we'll get more hockey later when Leo comes on. But, oh, my God, it's just those two teams. And then you occasionally get a Preds.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally a Preds game. Never the Blues, though. Never the Blues. Never the Stars. Only those three teams.
Absolutely. Well, what do you guys say? What do you say we hop back into it? Hop back into ISU sports, which we have not talked about in 5 weeks.
Yeah,
I'm ready. I know you guys are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so we have some ISU sports to talk about. So first segment, we're going to talk some college football over winter break, I should say. Redbird football, they were able to make the FCS playoffs for the first time in a few seasons. So it was nice to see them in the playoffs. Made it all the way to the final eight teams where they eventually lost to the North Dakota State Bison. But it was a pretty competitive game. They only lost 9-3. And based on what people were trying to predict about this game, they were thinking the Redbirds were just going to get blown out.
Yeah, some of the people down in the office had some choice words for Kirk Herbstreit after what he said about the Birds before that game. But yeah, I was super impressed by the Birds' run. Obviously, a lot of it had to do with James Robinson, who we've talked about, and I'm sure we're going to continue talking about it. Hopefully, once we get closer to the draft time, we'll have him back on the show. But I was very impressed by the defensive play, too, especially in that game against North Dakota State. Holding them to 9 points, that was incredible. And unfortunately, there were just some offensive hurdles we couldn't get over. But a great season. And I think even though we have a couple key pieces leaving, we still have a lot to build on. And I think for the next couple of years, these Redbirds are going to be a real threat playing football in the MVC.
And that was a good point that you brought up, Joey, is the fact that we did play so well with the missing pieces on offense that we did have. I mean, we all know that we lost Brady Davis, and we still ended up beating Southeast Missouri, and we ended up beating Central Arkansas. And if you look at that game, you brought up North Dakota State, who, you know, won the championship this year and has won it multiple years in a row.
I think 8 out of the last 9 seasons, yeah, it's been the Bison, so they built a dynasty for themselves.
That is definitely a dynasty. And when you look at that, it was a 9-3 game. Our defense held arguably one of the best teams in the CFS to 9 points, and we put up 3 with a backup quarterback, a freshman, in that. I think if Brady Davis is in that game, I think it's a different story. I think ISU would be crowned champions. That's my bold predicament just from how well the team played. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I think we would have won that game with our quarterback.
Yeah, I think so. Definitely with Brady Davis being out, that was a big hit for us. And now we just relied heavily on the run game of James Robinson, and he was just lighting up every game he was in. But I definitely think we could have won. There was one call where our defense, it was a scoop and score, but they called it off because there was a defensive pass interference. So I think if we got that call, we would have been up and taken the game. And that would have been the first turnover that Trey Lance would have committed, because after he won the national championship, they said he didn't throw a single interception or get a turnover all season, which is amazing.
And that just goes to show how good that ISU defense was this year. And it is a shame that we didn't get to see them go all the way. And pardon me, I got some gunk. We didn't get to see them go to the championship. But as I said before, I think we got a lot of life left in this team, even with the guys who are leaving. And I'm really excited for next year to see how Coach Speck can morph this team from a great team to a championship caliber team.
And you kind of look, we talk even in professional sports as well as like the major college sports in football. We talked about a lot of success that came from James Robinson. He had record numbers. He's probably going to be very highly drafted. I'm thinking maybe top 3-4 rounds. He just reminds me of kind of a David Montgomery type on the Chicago Bears. And I think with his attributes and how hard he can run, I mean, he showed time in and time again he can handle a workload. And I think that's a big part. But a big part of his success was our offensive line. And that's something that I kind of want to talk about, because we have Garrett Hirsch transferring. And I think that's some big news circling ISU.
Yeah, that definitely is some big news. One of our biggest and most experienced linemen that were able to help propel James Robinson to the success that he had. It's a bummer that we're going to lose him, but we still have some other people on the offensive line that are going to be able to step up. I think Drew Himmelman, if I'm not mistaken, is a sophomore junior that we're still going to have him. He's been a lineman that has just brought up all kinds of MVC accolades, but it's going to be a big loss. We've had some guys transfer in and out, but we've seen what head coach Brock Speck has been able to do with this team and kind of build around the newbies and the more experienced guys that they got and to make them into a more experienced, high-caliber playoff team.
And speaking of college football playoffs, just to deviate a little bit, I know you guys both watched the FBS championship game, LSU Clemson, and that was nuts. At least from what I was watching, I got through the first half, I had no idea who was going to win that game.
No, and that's the thing. I think Clemson, you know, battled back. Everyone was saying on Twitter and all the polls it was all LSU, heavily favored. My brother actually tweeted out, like, right after they got their first touchdown, Clemson, they tied it 7-7. He was like, oh, you know, don't sleep on Clemson. Obviously, that tweet aged very, very poorly.
Hey, for a while there, Steve had it, though. For a while, Steve had it unlocked.
Okay. It was close.
He was looking okay. But, yeah, I mean, what a good game. And God, that game just shows how good LSU really was as a football team this year. And I think, hands down, it could have been one of the best college football teams we have seen, not only in this past decade, but maybe ever.
And I wanted to get your boys' opinion on this, because I was talking about to my roommate about it Monday, and we were agreeing, but I wanted to bounce it off of you two. Watching that game, I was watching both of those quarterbacks, probably the two best quarterbacks in college football this year.
Oh, yeah.
And I really think that 5-7 years in the future, Taylor Lawrence is going to be a much better NFL quarterback than Joe Burrow will be.
You think Trevor Lawrence will be?
Trevor Lawrence,
I think,
yeah.
Trevor. You think he's going to be?
I think his skill set is going to transfer better to the NFL.
Let me build off something. Let me build a question off of what you just said.
Okay.
Because me and my roommates were talking about this. Would you trade, if you're a Bears fan?
Okay.
And you see, we went 8-8.
We're all Bears fans in here.
Yep.
We went eight and eight, and you would say that was a very unsuccessful season with the hype that we had around
this team. Yeah.
Would you trade Khalil Mack for the first overall pick in the 2020 draft? We've seen Trubisky, we've seen his struggles. I still think, truly, I am a believer that he has what it takes. He is athletic enough to come back and not be a stud. Obviously, we're going to have to see Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes all year. Not all year, all decade. They're going to be generation quarterbacks. There is no doubt about that. But Trubisky, I think, is good enough. If you put an offensive line with him, he's going to be just fine. He's going to play well. But would you trade Khalil Mack for one of these two quarterbacks? Or it would be Burrows. Burrows or Tua.
Freddie and I are both looking at each other.
Is he worth a franchise quarterback? Because there's a very good chance he's going to be a franchise quarterback. Or it could be a bust. Yeah. We've seen multiple number one, number two overall picks.
I don't want to get rid of Khalil Mack,
a
great edge rusher in his prime, who we are on the books.
But a quarterback is the captain
for,
of the team.
For a quarterback who is not proven. If you're talking, would you give away Khalil Mack to get Deshaun Watson, then I'd say yes.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's proven. Well, I don't know what Joe Burrow's going to do in the NFL. Like, that's the thing. Nobody knows.
It is.
Like, the guy, I looked it up because they said on the broadcast there was some Hawaii quarterback from, like, 2006 or something that holds the record for the most touchdowns thrown in an FBS season.
In college, yeah.
Yeah.
And turned out to be.
And he turned out to be nothing. Like, I can't even remember his name. And so that just goes to show you really have no idea how these guys – and their skills are going to translate.
I don't know. I saw him smoke that cigar after he won.
That was BA, though.
He looks
that
like a guy that BA. He is ready. He is ready to come into this league and just tear. But so did Baker.
Did you see the cops, the story on Twitter? The cops came in and tried to get him to stop. And then, like, all this Odell madness is going on. It's ridiculous.
God. I can go on forever about OBJ. Were you watching? They were giving a speech after the game, and OBJ hopped in. I think it was Dave Portnoy.
Yes.
On Twitter tweeted it, and he was like, I can't believe OBJ. This is amazing how he can just not even let him. You know, it's like, that's a whole other topic. But, you know, we only got an hour or so.
Yeah.
That is right. If only we could have more time, but we only got an hour. That's what we are given. So we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk some Redbird men's and women's basketball. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Got a hot take? Join the discussion on Twitter by tweeting at WZND with the hashtag RedZone. It's the Red Zone on 103.3 WZND,
the Pulse of Redbird Nation.
Welcome back to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND. I'm Anthony Ferretti alongside Joey Dwyer and Scott Rosallo. We got our first show back from winter break on the campus of ISU. Now we're going to jump into some more Redbird sports and talking about Redbird men's and women's basketball. And it's an interesting season because we've seen they've been in the past, they've kind of been on the same path, but now they're on opposite ends of the spectrum when it comes to how they have performed this season.
You know what, Anthony? You want to know why I'm not worried? I know we sit second to last, 1-3 in conference, and 6-10 overall, but there's a reason why I'm not worried, and that reason is the first-place team that's in this conference. You look at the Bradley Braves, who are 4-1 in conference and 13-5 overall. They won the Arch Madness last year, and they had a very, very poor regular season. So I know Illinois State's struggling right now, but I'm still hopeful. I'm hopeful for Arch.
Yeah, and I think looking ahead to Arch Madness, I think is looking a little far for this team.
I think around the corner, though.
They got to figure out how to win in the Valley, because if you look at their matchups before conference play, some of the losses are really understandable. Like, you've got teams like UCF, Cincinnati, real powerhouse teams that maybe, as a mid-major, you're not expecting to beat early in the season when you've got all these young guys. But that should be preparing you for conference play, right? But then coming in, they get the win against UNI, but then they drop three straight, SIU, Missouri State, and Indiana State, and now going to Drake, and projections are saying that that's going to be their fourth loss in a row. And I think you just got to shape up now before you worry about anything in the future.
Yeah, but the last person that we had on this show last semester was J.C. Hillsman. And, you know, he's out on the basketball team. Obviously, he's been getting some solid minutes. He came in and he talked about it. He talked about Arch Madness last year. He talked about the poor taste that it left in his mouth. And he said that they were going to build on that throughout the entire season. And that's why I bring that up, because he even said that they have that in their minds now. And I know that regular season matters. It matters for if you're playing on Thursday, if you're playing on Friday. There's a lot that goes into it. And I know we have a lot of time left. It's mid-January. They have the rest of January. They have all of February to get back on track. And that's why I'm not too worried. Obviously, 6-10, it's not ideal, and it's not a record you want to be sitting at. But Illinois State in the past has shown that they can get hot this time of year. And, you know, you're right. They're coming off a three-game losing streak. But we do have Drake, who is heavily favored. Heavily, heavily favored. But I don't know. This ISU team and Dan, you know, Mueller, he knows how to get them ready. And I think coming back from a three-game losing streak, I think this is one that they can come out and take.
And just looking at some stats real quick that I was just pulling up about the Missouri Valley, it's concerning numbers, to say the least. ISU is ninth in total offense, eighth in total defense. Mm-hmm. So they're getting stomped on both sides of the ball right now.
Yeah.
And Ferretti, I know that you follow this team probably closer than anyone else on this campus. And I just, it's a lot of youth, and I'm at a loss for answers of what Dan Mueller can do to pull these guys out of this funk.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. We saw a lot of the starters last year, and you take a look here, like, I would agree that it's basically all new faces. I mean, you got Zach Copeland, who's been the starter last year for a little bit, but that's really the only veteran that you have on the team that's gotten playing time. Everyone else was really sitting out because of the transfer rules and redshirting, but there, you got to think of what head coach Dan Mueller is going to want to do with this team. And I think just getting them in the gym more and kind of just getting them closer together and maybe not playing basketball for themselves, but playing basketball for the team, you know, try and move the ball around. And I've seen just a lot. They're trying to move the ball around the arc and shoot threes, which is great, but they're shooting it early in the shot clock and they're not crashing in the paint to get those rebounds. And then it turns into other points for the opposing team. So they just got to manage the shot clock better and they got to rebound and they got to be the team that wants to win the game more than their opponent.
And I think we brought it up a couple times too, even at the start of the season. We knew that Zach Copeland was going to kind of be the guy that took charge of this team and became the point guy. The thing that I think that we didn't really understand was he was going to be the only one that stepped up. I know, Joey, you brought up how they're struggling on offense and defense. Usually when a team has potential and has kind of like a, what's the word for it, an upside?
A high ceiling.
Like a high ceiling. Usually they're dominant in one category, and they're struggling in one, and then hopefully, you know, you think maybe if you fix one, then you're going to have two dominant categories, and then you can kind of bounce up. But this team, like you said, you brought up the statistics, they are struggling on both sides of the court. But like I said, things can be adjusted. Teams can build chemistry, and that's one thing that this team does have compared to last year, is they have chemistry. This team enjoys playing together. So I think it can go either way.
But one of the scary things that I found when I was just looking up stuff preparing for the show is that if you look at the Missouri Valley top 25 in scoring, not a single player in the top 25 is from ISU.
Mm-hmm.
Bradley's got like three.
Oh, no, they have
Indiana
multiple, yeah.
State's got three. And so you have to take that into consideration, even though Zach Copeland is the guy, right? He's the guy who has stepped up, and he's filling the big, like, quote-unquote Phil Fane shoes, right?
Right.
He isn't producing like a number one guy
no.
in this conference. And this is – it's we've seen it in the past couple years in NCAA tournament play. This is a competitive mid-major conference who can make some real noise in postseason play. And so for that to happen, you have to have guys produce at this high level. And ISU just doesn't have anybody who's up to the task at the moment.
Just to piggyback off of that, with the points per game, it's Zach Copeland leading 14.3 points per game, and then the guy in second is Keith Fisher with 7.5 points per game. So Zach is almost doubling, or just about doubling, what the second place score has on the team. And you got to have multiple scores.
He's the only one in the double digits. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. When you and I understand, and I stopped myself there because I understand that the team is young, and this is the first year this core of guys has played together. But if
I'm still ready to, I know this is going to be a hard topic, but I'm still ready to change up maybe the coaching staff. Ooh. I know he's a fan favorite. He's a school favorite. He hasn't done anything. He hasn't gotten the job done. He has not gotten this team to the tournament.
This is a prove it year. This is a prove it year because he had the pieces last year, and he showed that.
And the year before.
He showed he couldn't get it done with the pieces there. And so this is a year where you have to kind of rally the troops. And
they started out 3-0. Let's not forget, this team started out 3-0.
We were sitting in these very chairs in November, and we were talking about how excited we are for this basketball season. And over the last month and a half, they have really kind of slowed down in every aspect of the game. And so you're kind of left with this, are they good and underperforming, or are they bad and were they just overperforming,
mm-hmm.
or is it somewhere in the middle? And I don't think I'm the only one who's confused by the performance of this team.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm still trying to figure it out. I was looking at the first MVC game that they played against UNI, and looking at the score, they were down like 23-8, and then they somehow came out and won the game to get their first MVC win. And now all of a sudden they're just falling. And it's a, some games they can perform well and sometimes they can't. You know, it's like they either have a strong night or they have an off night. You know, it's never an in-between.
And the reason I should kind of really capitalize on what I said here, because I don't want to just name drop and say something wrong without kind of giving some support to why I said it. Dan Mueller is a great guy. He's a great guy, great coach. He played at Illinois State. His jersey is in... He's got a banner up, you know, in the arena. The thing is, he's been here for so long, and this team has not had, you know, much success getting to the NCAA tournament. And you see all these teams, when that happens, they branch out, they find another coach, they change things up, and then you kind of rebuild off that. That's the reason why I bring it up. Because I think when you go this long without making it to the tournament, all the fans, all the students, all the people, the locals that follow this team day in and day out, they want to see success and they want to see change. And that's the reason why I bring it up.
And you're absolutely right. Like, we've had Coach Mueller on the show. He's a fantastic guy. And I don't think that you can chalk up last year to last year's fault in the MVC tournament to Dan Mueller. I think that was just a bad storm of guys who were a little less motivated than I'm sure fans would like them to be. And this year he's put in an especially tough spot where you've got a young core and you have to try to build something around it. And it's just going to be tough for fans to look at that and not see fault in Dan Mueller for it because of the expectations that the team has had the last couple of years.
Yeah, I see your point there. And you're right, but you're talking about just last year. You're not talking about, you know, the years before that where he's had teams that did have a lot of talent and that did get along in the locker room and that were good outside in the classroom and outside the court as well, and they went to the championship game and lost, you know, back-to-back-to-back years. So that's what I'm talking about. I get last year yes, maybe it was a rough year with the guys that he had and the head cases that he had in the locker room and the problems that we had outside of the locker room. You know, we have to bring it up now, but you know all the things that happened last year. And I think that's – so last year, yes, last year could be a wash, I'd say. But years before that and this year, I think, are not helping his case.
Okay. I was going to rebut, but you're right. And it's we're just going to have to wait and see where the team goes. And I know all three of us are hoping, because it's looking like the three of us are going to be down at the tournament, and I'm sure we'd all love to be there till Sunday, you know?
I think so, yeah. Based on the luck that they've had, they came close in the year before we came in 16-17. They made it all the way to the championship. I believe they lost to Wichita State.
Oh, that was the year before they left, yeah.
Yeah, and then they got snubbed in the NCAA tournament and went to the NIT, but we'll have to see what's going on. And we have something new that we want to try and get the listeners involved. So log into at WZND Sports on Twitter. We are going to have our Red Zone question of the week. And the question is, who will lead the Redbirds in scoring against the Loyola Ramblers on Sunday? They're going to play the Drake Bulldogs. They're going to tip off Shirley at 7 in Des Moines. But then on Sunday, they're going to play the Loyola Ramblers. WZND will have live coverage of that game beginning at 2:50. So who do you think the Redbirds are going to – who's going to lead in scoring? Is it Zach Copeland, DJ Horn, Dedrick Boyd, or is it someone else?
Are we allowed to give them a little hint on what we think would be?
If you want to give your hint, we can. I'm going to tweet that right now.
We'll give our answers after the break so they can vote and then hear how they're wrong when we say our answers.
All right, well, we'll take a break. When we come back, we got the newscast with our news and sports guests, and then we're going to talk some professional hockey. Stay with us. You're listening to The Red Zone on 103.3 WZND. Thank you, Leo, for that wonderful newscast, and you are our first news and sports guest of the semester, and tell the listeners what you want to be talking about.
We're going to be talking a little NHL hockey here tonight, since it's right around the All-Star break mid-season. A lot's happening in the league, and we're just going to go right into it.
I think so. So as you mentioned, it's about halfway through the season. The All-Star game is in St. Louis next week. There are some Hawks and Blues players competing in that, but let's just start with the Blackhawks. They're struggling a little bit. They're still trying to get back to the playoffs and be successful in the playoffs, and they just haven't found their niche yet this year.
No, they really just can't get any momentum going. Every time it looks like they've turned the corner, they will have a bad game like the New Jersey one where they lost 7-1, and it seems like they take 2 or 3 steps back, and they just keep having these opportunities to make up some ground and lose them. So right now you're going to need about 95 points to make the playoffs. The Hawks, it's going to be tough to get to that 95-point threshold. One of the beat writers from The Athletic said they're basically going to have to go 21-10 the rest of the season to have a chance of making playoffs, and that's going to be tough to do.
That's very doable, though, for the Hawks. And with the players that they have and the core that they have, I think that they can get it done. The only thing that scares me about this team is the respect that they have for Coach Jeremy Colleton. I think that they don't respect him. He's younger than a couple of the core players that are on the team, I believe. I think that was a stat that I was looking up. But I just think he doesn't have control over this team. They sit 22-20 right now. They've been kind of bouncing back all year around that 500 mark, and I don't know. It's tough. I think that they can get it done with the core that they have, but it's going to be a tough road.
And speaking of coaching issues in Chicago, do you guys know about all this stuff going down, the investigation into assistant coach Mark Crawford right now?
A little bit. I know what's going on. Yeah.
So basically what happened is there was a reporter, and he was interviewing Sean Avery, if you know Sean Avery, the instigator, famous for the front facing screen on Marty Brodeur, Brodeur threw back at him. But Sean Avery, the reporter asked, "So did Mark Crawford like ever hit you when you were on the bench?" And Sean Avery's like, "Yeah, he did, because I took a dumb penalty, and so he hit me." And so now there's these stories coming out, and Brent Sopel had his name brought into it too. And so there are these guys who are tied to this now. And I was listening to an interview with Sean Avery, and he's like mortified that his name is attached to this, because he's like, Mark Crawford, yeah, he was a hard coach to play for, but he coached, and that was how he did it. And he was successful. And Watching the Hawks game, they were doing an interview beforehand, and all these young guys like Kirby Doc and DeBrincat were talking about how much they love playing for Mark Crawford. But now that just throws another wrench in this team that's really like on the brink of making it or not.
Well, I think the issue with Mark Crawford was the history of abuse. But then what was interesting what the investigation yielded was that 10 years ago he began seeking out therapy about his abusive behavior, which is really in hockey culture, it's rare to see somebody recognize they have a problem with their behavior and then go get help for it before there are consequences. So I think that does show a good direction for him. And you do mention that he does seem to have the respect of the team, even Colleton's respect too. Over break, my dad and I took in a morning skate at the United Center, and we saw that it was kind of when the team would be huddling up, it was kind of Crawford was doing a lot of the drawing out the plays and stuff, and Colleton was kind of going to him for a lot of advice, it seemed like, at practice. So it does seem like, well, he's not the head coach. He does have some of the respect of the team, so that could be something. While I don't respect Colleton, they might respect his assistant coach and respect that he surrounds himself with good people, maybe.
You know, when the Blackhawks sit fifth in the division right now, the Central Division, let me ask you guys a question circling around this team. If the Hawks don't make the playoffs this year, do you start to rebuild the following year? Do you start to cut some of the – or not cut, but do you start to move on and maybe trade and kind of really get rid of your core guys and really start that rebuild with a nice young coach that you have? Or do you just try to pick up some guys off of free agency and try to build again like they kind of did this year?
Well, this is the Blackhawks we're talking about, so really anything that seems like it makes sense, they probably won't do. I think that's kind of been the holding pattern they've been in the past two seasons where I can almost see this scenario happening. Say they missed the playoffs by like 6 points like they did last season. You know, they figure that we were almost in it. We kind of got depleted by injuries right around the stretch. We look good at times. That might just be enough to convince themselves to do nothing, to stand pat. Don't fire anyone. Don't make any big moves. Just kind of stick with what they have and not really do the self-evaluation they would have to do if they finish at the bottom of the division. So I think they might finish right in the middle of things, and that could hamper any big off-season plans.
There's two guys I really want to get rid of, and I know Joey agrees on me with one. I don't know how you feel about the second one.
If I know
Brent Seabrook.
Brent Seabrook. Brent Seabrook might not ever play again because of how bad his shoulder is.
True.
And who's the other one?
Taser.
Javon Taze.
Oh man.
I know. Woo. The thing is, this is why I say Javon Taze, because you have Taves and you have Kane. Kane is going nowhere. That guy will finish his career as Chicago Blackhawk. He is a Hall of Famer. He is a legend.
And everything you just said also applies to Jonathan Taves.
No.
Jonathan Taves is a Hall of Famer.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
That's fair. He's a Hall of Famer.
But he is not a Patrick Kane. He is someone that you can get rid of now, sell high, because he's, what, 31?
But Scotty, he's still so productive. In his last, like, 35 games, he's averaging over a point a game.
Yes, but there
like,
is going
been,
to be...
He's been insane.
There is going to be another Jonathan Taves, and there is going to be another Patrick Kane, and the thing is, they were great. It's hard because, like, yes, the past decade, how can you not thank them for the success that this Blackhawk team has had? But they're getting old. They came on this team when they were, you know, 19, 20 years old. Mm-hmm. He's 31 now. He's done his time here. He has earned what he has earned here. Now let's get something from him and build again and do it again.
The issue with Jonathan Taves, where I can kind of get behind your point, is when he came into the league, he was a two-way player. And now it seems like his body's taken its toll. He's gone with age.
He's a vegan now.
He now has to choose if he's either going to be an offensive player or a defensive player. He can't be the dominant two-way force he once was. Which is why
that hurts us, though.
Right. So he's not the number one center he used to be, which is why Dylan Strome and Kirby Doc have to take on bigger roles.
And I think Kirby Doc can take on the role that he has.
Yeah, he has. Right. He's definitely been putting up some numbers as a rookie, and that might have been a bit of an omen when they drafted him third overall.
And I'll admit, I was not happy with it.
No, I wanted Bowen Byram, the defenseman.
Yeah, I wanted a defenseman, which I still think we should have taken.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying take Alex Turcotte just because he was he's from the area.
Yeah. And he's cool. Alex Turcotte's cool.
Yes, Scotty's just going to name drop all these dudes he played in Chicago. But to the point, Leo made a very good point about Jonathan Taves getting a little older, not being able to be as effective of a two-way forward. But that doesn't mean he's still not an effective player. And I think his leadership is one of the most valuable things that he has, and especially, Scott, because you were talking about the lack of respect in the locker room for Cotton because he's such a young guy. Who are these players going to have to turn to? That Jonathan Toews, his leadership is one of the factors that that came into this Blackhawks dynasty that we saw early in the decade. So I think that he plays a more important role on the team than just what he does on the ice. And his on-ice product is not bad. It's not worth canning him and trying to rebuild using him as a piece.
But it's to my belief that he is one of the reasons why there is trouble in the locker room. He is one of the ones that is not getting along with Carlton. And that is something that you can't have with your captain. If your captain's not getting along with your head coach, that is going to cause problems in the locker room. It is.
And Toews isn't the only one we've seen bust toss Colleton. Duncan Keith was really the first one to
do
it.
He's your assistant captain.
Right.
Or your alternate captain.
And the other alternate. So, when Seabrook got scratched this season, we saw that when he was told he wasn't asked about being scratched, we saw that several other of the players were upset about that. So it's almost as if
Colleton's
treated
you
that divide by mistreating
captains.
His veterans.
Yes, but you just kind of helped me out here. You just named their two captains who the team looks to and goes to. They're the ones that don't get along with the head coach. That is not a good thing. And obviously, these players, they're going to always hold a place in every Chicago fan's heart. They are.
Yeah,
because they brought us 3 Stanley Cups in 10 years or whatever. I know it's getting more now, but 3 in 10 years. And the thing is, when you look at that, yes, but they're what? Like Keith's like 35, Toews is 31. And you're saying like he's still producing on the ice. Yes. That's why you get rid of him now, because there's going to be teams that are going to be shooting for a Stanley Cup that are going to give you top dollar for him now that you wouldn't get in 2 years from now.
But I want to beg the question. If you're having the captains on your team clashing with the coach, whose side are you going to – if you're general management of the Chicago Blackhawks, whose side do you take on that? Because it's kind of like you have these guys who, through this coaching change, they've been your constants. So if you bring in the piece, if you bring in Cotton and he's not meshing with the guys, who is that on? And – what action do you take to rectify that?
Well, I think the Blackhawks management is probably going to side with the players here, because Jeremy Colleton doesn't carry enough weight to warrant a trade for a Duncan Keith, a Hall of Fame defenseman, or a Jonathan Toews, your captain. If anything, they'll probably can Colleton at the end of the season and bring in somebody that might carry a little more weight, carry a little more respect from these players, like a Peter Laviolette or
Gerard
Gallant,
yeah,
who just
got fired.
Yes.
No, there's a lot of potential on who you can bring in, and that's a good point that you caught me there. The only reason I don't see them getting rid of him is because they brought in such a young coach, and from my perspective, I thought they did that because they wanted a coach that would build with the team.
Right.
And that's why when
and
you think of a rebuild, you think of a young coach that has.
I think
a young
yeah,
team.
They thought to, not yeah. to cross sports here, but it would be like bringing in the young hip coach, almost like a Sean McVay in hockey. Like,
yeah.
And it just hasn't worked out. One, his system isn't any good. He can't play with the pieces he has. Mm-hmm. The man-to-man defensive system's a mess. So just for that, I think you know his days might be numbered, but. Mm-hmm. It'd be one thing if the players don't get along with him and he was a good coach, but he isn't a good coach and the players don't get along with him, so something's going to have to give.
And I agree, and I think that the Hawks are a couple pieces away from... I mean, to be honest, they're 22-20-6.
Right.
They're 2 games over .500. They're not... They could be worse, and they're
and
not.
And you think about all the injuries they've dealt with, too. Like,
and their goalie
for them to be
position
to
has been that. Still rocky, I'd say.
Yeah,
I mean,
between
I think the goalies have Crawford, stolen a lot of games where the defense has been pretty bad.
They have, but I'm just saying there's pieces that you're missing, starting with defensemen,
right.
And that's something that I think that they need to address first. I think the forwards are fine. We're getting. I mean, I know we talked a little bit off air about the whole Panarin and Saad movement.
I don't want to get
we
into
should
that.
We should have never
but,
gotten rid of Panarin.
But you see that
Scott.
Now.
Scott,
how do you know?
Scott, you
I
did.
Mean, it was Saad.
I mean, he did. All right, but he also won the Calder. Panarin won the Calder Trophy, but like. But it's just that was not a good move in my opinion.
But okay, you look at the logistics of that trade. Panarin had 2 years left on his deal. He just cashed in on a $13 million cap hit. No way the Hawks afford that.
No.
At the time of the deal, Saad had 4 years left at $6 million. So you bring Saad in. You bring in a more defensively responsible forward. And when you traded Panarin, you brought in this kid named Alex DeBrincat. And in the 2 years
who's
after the trade.
Who's struggling right now.
Right.
A little bit, yeah.
But in the 2 years after the trade, DeBrincat had more goals than Panarin. Obviously, Panarin's exploded this season. But so you essentially replaced Panarin's offensive output with a cheaper player in DeBrincat, while adding a more defensively responsible player. Now, that meant nothing because you had goaltending injuries and a bad defense, but on a playoff team, having a player like Saad could be a real asset,
as well as having
to bring it. So you can see where the logic in the trade was, but it doesn't help that Panarin's blossomed into this superstar while a lot of the work in Saad's game kind of goes unheralded.
You're right, because it was a very strategic route that they went. It just didn't work with the system that they had and the players that they had. And I think that's the hard point that happened. And you don't know that.
When you put Panarin on these past two teams,
you're still going to struggle.
He doesn't make the difference between making the playoffs or not, because he can't play defense. He can't put pucks out of the net.
You might be worse. You might be worse off. I mean, yeah, he's having a great year, but he's also having a great year with a better offensively team.
Artemi Panarin doesn't put the 17-18 team with Jeff Glass playing goalie in the playoffs. It just doesn't get you over the hump.
And speaking of the goalie situation, Scott, you brought it up a little earlier. Interview clip came out a couple days ago where somebody asked Robin Lehner, would you sign with the Hawks? Because he's on that one-year deal right now. They're like, they asked him, would you sign with the Hawks again? And he's like, I love playing here, but I've been taking team-friendly contracts all my life, and I'm not doing that again. Mm-hmm. And I think it's not a hot take for me to say that he's far and away been the better Blackhawks goaltender this year. And so you're coming up on Robin Lehner at the end of his contract. Do you re-sign him and kind of make the transition, or do you stay with Crow, who has had his problems, but when he's good, he's good?
Yes, but.
There's big but.
Yes. No. But you can go, you know what? Leave it
so off. The deal with Lehner, that he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year. And the Hawks, right now, they'll only have about $9 million in cap space at the end of the season to work with in free agency. And also coming up in this offseason, you're going to have to re-sign Dylan Strome, Dominic Kubalik, and a few other of the role players. Now, Leonard's going to command about a $7 million cap hit. Mm-hmm. He's the best goalie on the market. So you free up you take up $7 million of that remaining $9 million. That's not going to be enough to re-sign Strome and Kubalik. You might have to trade somebody like Connor Murphy or Brandon Saad. So say you have to sell off some of these role players to be able to fit Leonard under the cap. It doesn't necessarily make you a better team, because then you lose your depth. It's almost like a good or a bad baseball team with a good closer, where there's just not enough to work with there, even though they do have a good goalie. So I might prefer they go a route where they keep Strome, keep Kubalik, keep their depth, and maybe find a cheap fixer goalie like somebody like a Darcy Kemper out of Arizona, somebody on a cheap cap hit that can give you effective work, like a 1A option.
Yeah, I would definitely agree that you want to keep all these young guys that we have, Strome, Kubalik, even DeBrincat when he was kind of starting off.
Right.
They've really been those guys that we can kind of like hang off of. Henry Yokiharju, I thought we should have kept him because he was a defenseman that, I mean, we needed defensemen.
Yeah, that trade makes no sense. Yeah. They traded from a position of weakness for a position of strength. They traded a defenseman for a forward, and it really has not worked or looking much better.
And we're going to need defensemen, because as we've been talking about, Keith and Seabrook, they're getting up there. They're getting veterans. And
Keith will be able to play for a couple more years.
Yeah, who knows if they...
3 more years, I'd say. Was he 34, 35?
He's 35, but with his game, he could probably play,
I think, till 38. I think he can still produce till 38.
He's been able to change his game the past couple seasons. He doesn't have that quick first step he used to, and he hasn't been able to play as physical as he used to, but he still is an effective player. He's just so good with his stick. I mean, so few players in the league can force turnovers the way he does with his stick. So he's going to continue to adapt his game. He's one of the best defensemen of this era.
Well, we'll see what the Hawks can do. They're going to take on the Toronto Maple Leafs on Saturday at 7. We're going to take our final break of the show. When we come back, it is the best, I guess, picks in radio sports talk show history, the 3 up, 3 down. Stay with us. You're listening to the Red Zone on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Going up, coming down.
It's the 3 up, 3 down.
3 up, 3 down.
Only on the Pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
Welcome back to the Red Zone. It is the 3 up, 3 down, our final segment for the show. So the way this works, we pick some men's college basketball games. We all have to pick 3 favorites to win the games and 3 underdogs to win the games. And one of the favorites to win the games, you can only pick one of the 6 that is over 80%. So, Leo, as our guest on the show, do you want to start us off?
Sure, I'd be honored to. The first three up, three down of the semester. So for my three up predictions, I have the University of Missouri, Kansas over the California State University Bakersfield Roadrunners. The UMC Kansas is a 72% favorite.
All right, now for my first one, this one is a little, the percentage isn't as high, but it's because I like the team. My boy, Anthony Penny Hardaway, coaching Memphis, their favorite to beat the Cincinnati Bearcats. They're 62.6% favorite, and they're just going to wipe the floor with them.
You know what? I'm going to give you guys my down pick first, and it's going to be a team that I really like watching, especially in college basketball. Arizona State over Colorado, that game's at 44%. I think they get out and get it done.
Go, and Steve Cease, our faculty advisor, he also wants to get in on the action. First game, he's picking Illinois State and the Drake Bulldogs, tipping off just in about 8-ish minutes. Drake is favored to beat the Redbirds 78.1%, and that is who Steve is taking. As for me, my first pick, I'm taking the Loyola Ramblers over the Illinois State Redbirds on Sunday. Loyola, a 72.5% chance of winning this game.
That's blasphemous, but my second pick is Colorado over Arizona. Colorado is a 55.8% favorite in that game.
Wow, that's a bold pick. 55% favorite? All right. I nothing but respect for it, though. My next one, this is my over 80. So I got Dayton going into St. Louis, so taking on St. Louis University, 82.6% favorite. That game, no question in my mind. SLU is a academically very prestigious school. Athletically, not so much.
Yarbrough
so
went there.
That's true. But then he left. So
yeah, true.
So we're going Dayton in that one.
You know what? You know what's funny? You guys know me. You know how I like to change things up a little bit. I actually, for this first week, I decided I was so confident in my picks, I don't have an over 80. So my next one, this is going to be my first, it's a 62% game. This is my first up game. It's Memphis over Cincinnati.
Hey!
And yeah, I know you would agree with that. I think Memphis is going to take that, and it's going to take me to 2-0.
Faculty advisor Steve Cease, he is taking Sam Houston State over Houston Baptist. They are a 78.9% favorite. As for me, this is my over 80%. It is the second-ranked Baylor Bears, 87.9%, over the Oklahoma Sooners. Pick number three, Leo.
All right, my third up is also my over 80 pick. I have the Oregon Ducks at an 83.8% favorite over Washington State.
Go Ducks, baby. All right. Not me, though. Next, my last up. This is a barn burner for sure. We got 74.5% favorite Kansas heading down to Texas, and I think that's going to be a breeze for the Jayhawks.
I'm going to have to go back to our conference, and because we always do. I don't know if we touched up on this. We always do Missouri Valley Conference game.
We do, yes.
This is my Missouri Valley Conference game, and I talked to Steve about this. I have Illinois State over Drake, and that is at 21.9%. So that is my second down, and I don't know. I think Illinois State's going to come out and get this win. So that's one of my upsets.
We will have to see what happens. Even though Steve did pick Drake over Illinois State, I mean, hey, we've been talking to Illinois State Rebel basketball. Try and shock us here. His final up pick for Steve, it is Liberty over Lipscomb, 96.7%. My final pick, number six, Kansas Jayhawks, 74.5% over the Texas Longhorns. And now we go to our down picks.
My first down pick, I had a friend phone me in that this is an upset waiting to happen. Western Illinois versus Oral Roberts. The Leathernecks are a 26.2% favorite, so we'll go with the Necks there.
Leo's got some insider information he didn't care to share with the rest of the class, so my picks are not nearly as well informed. But my first down, I got Oregon State. They're going to Washington. They've got a 41.1% on them, but, you know, I don't really know a whole lot about Oregon State, but their leading scorer is a guy named Tinkle, and I thought that was funny, so we're riding with Oregon State.
I like that. You know what? I'm going to give you my second up. Well, we're going after that. Winthrop over Hampton Pirates. That game's at 78.7%. So I guess that's my closest one to the 80. But it's still underneath. That's an easy game. I remember Steve was even bringing that up when we were talking down here. You got to pick the 78% game. So I did. Yeah. I took Winthrop, and I think that's going to get me my fourth win.
Steve sees his first down pick is Ohio over Toledo. Toledo is 54.4% favored to win it, but he's taking Ohio. My first one, taking Arizona State, the Sun Devils, 44.1% to upset the 20th ranked Colorado Buffaloes.
And for my second down, I also had the game Joey did. Didn't even plan that. I did not know about the infamous Tinkle, but I just like Oregon State Athletics, so I picked them at a 41.3 underdog.
It's a good game. It caught my eye. I was looking through ESPN, and I was like, ooh, that's enticing. But my second one, also going to be a fun one. We've got Southern Mississippi hosting the Rice Owls. I've got a buddy who goes to Rice, and so I'm sticking it to him a little bit. Southern Miss is at a 46.5%, but I think that these are two kind of okay teams. It's going to be – that's a toss-up for sure. I know absolutely nothing about either of them, but – hey, fingers crossed for Southern Miss.
I like that. You know what? I'm going to give you my last up game here. It's at 64.7%. I have Charleston over Northeastern. I like that game a lot, not only because, obviously, they're favored, but Charleston has been having a very solid year, and I think they even have a chance at winning their conference and going to the NCAA. So that's my last up game for you.
Second down game for our faculty advisor, Steve Cease. He really loves this one. It's Charleston. They're favored to win 67.9%. But for him taking the down, he's taking Hofstra. Gotta love him some Hofstra. He's taking that. My second down pick, Oregon State, 41.1% underdogs to take down the Washington Huskies. So we'll see if that happens. We've all done five picks, so let's get our last pick going.
My last but certainly not least pick, it would be Morehead State over Tennessee State at 40.4%.
All right, boys, I saved my best for last. This underdog
pick
is
bad.
This is a doozy. This is a doozy. Two ranked teams are playing Tuesday night. We got Butler heading over to Pennsylvania, taking on Villanova. 44.2%. I'm taking the Butler Bulldogs, baby.
This is my last game. This is my last game, and it's going to be my 6-0 game because I'm confident. I am very confident with these picks. What do you
got
to say?
Yeah, Scotty's already 5-0 over here. We've got a board in the news and sports office, and it's got our rankings. We had pick six on there, so now we got 3 up, 3 down, and everybody's got 0-0 except Scotty's got 6-0, but he wrote it himself.
Well, you know what? This one goes courtesy to Gina Malnati. She gave me this last pick here. It is a 33.3%. It is my last down pick. It is UAB over FIU. And I think that one is going to get me my 6-0 pick.
Steve Cease's last pick. He's doing a little Big East matchup. He is taking Creighton over the DePaul Blue Devils. 51.7% is the DePaul favorite. My last pick. This could be a bold one because they got upset last night. Auburn, the Tigers. They lost to Alabama last night, but I'm thinking they might be able to rebound over Florida State. They are 38% underdogs to win that game, so we'll have to see what happens. And that will just about wrap up the show for this week's edition of the Redbird Zone. A big thank you to our news and sports guest, Leo Stoddaher, for being on the show with us this week, talking some professional hockey and the Blackhawks, seeing where they can go. Hopefully, we're optimistic and seeing where we can go. I mean, you look at the Blues. They were in last place heading into the All-Star break, and they were able to bring home the Stanley Cup, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and Anthony, congratulations. This is your first time, you know, hosting the show.
It's been an absolute pleasure. I'm so excited for the rest of the semester. It's going to be fun. The three of us are going to have some good times. Hopefully some heated debates
heavily heated debates.
Yeah, I'm very excited for this semester as well. And if you missed any portion of tonight's show, the entire podcast will be available online shortly at WZND.com. Don't forget to head to @ZND Sports on Twitter to take part in our poll. For Scott Rosala, Joey Dwyer, and Anthony Ferretti, you've been listening to The Red Zone on the pulse of Redbird Nation, 103.3 WZND.
To hear this and other past episodes of The Red Zone again, download the Red Zone podcast online at WZND.com or on iTunes. And of course, tune into The Red Zone every Thursday at 6, right here on 103.3 WZND.
The Pulse of Redbird Nation.